The top stories from the KCBS Radio Newsroom. This is the All Local.
Have you felt sluggish lately? A new study out of UC Davis says there may be more evidence behind those feelings than we thought. The study on mental sharpness used smartwatches to help participants track how sharp they feel and then compare it with real data. To tell us about their findings, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Sarah Farias, a professor of neurology at UC Davis and a senior author of this study. Dr. Sarah Farias, welcome to KCBS. Good to have you on today.
Thanks for having me.
Can we start maybe with just a definition of kind of a broad, nebulous word? When we talk about sharpness, mental sharpness, what are we talking about?
Yeah, what we call it actually in the field of cognitive aging and Alzheimer's research is subjective cognitive decline. So it's a internal perception or sense that cognitive functions are changing, declining compared to one's own baseline. But at the same time, we don't see objective evidence, at least on screening type of measures to assess cognition, and sometimes even on more extended neuropsychological batteries. But there's this internal sense that and perception that things are not right in terms of thinking.
Yeah, one of the things we want to look at is how accurate is that internal sense. Your study found that people's own sense of their mental sharpness lined up with how they actually performed on cognitive tests. Were they pretty much in line with one another?
Yeah, so we did find that they correlated. And just to give maybe a little bit of context, more typically when we assess somebody's subjective cognitive decline, we have them complete a questionnaire or even in the clinic ask them questions about how they feel like their cognition has been doing over, say, the last year. So it's a retrospective rating. They're trying to remember and characterize how they've been doing over the last year. So in this study, we really wanted to ask in the moment, in their daily life, how are they perceiving the sharpness of their thinking, their mental alertness? And then we also gave them an objective measure to assess cognition. And we did this four times a day for a week to get a sense of whether their perceptions and how they actually did on our cognitive test aligned. And we did find that, in fact, those two things were correlated.
You know, it's interesting. I can tell you, as one who has reached a certain age, when you go in for your physical at the doctor, my doctor would give me three words. Let's say Cadillac, porcupine, and walnut. And then 5 or 10 minutes later, ask me to repeat back those words. Is that an accurate way of looking at cognitive decline?
It's one way. It's really a screening measure. So it can be fairly sensitive to at least pronounced cognitive issues. But as you can imagine, you know, three words is can be difficult. But in more comprehensive neuropsychological testing, we do much more in-depth testing that can be more sensitive. But even in those cases, sometimes we see that there's a disconnect between what people are telling us about their perception of their cognition. So for example, they feel like they're declining, and we're not even seeing it on our neuropsych testing. And part of the problem, again, could be that retrospective rating might be biased in terms of, you know, having difficulty really recalling what problems they have. And so the idea with this study was to ask people more in the moment during their daily activity. You know, they'd get pinged on the Apple Watch and we'd ask them to rate their alertness and then take a short measure. And so we thought that that might be a much more accurate way to measure their subjective perception of their cognitive function.
Yeah, one of the things that I find just really interesting about your study is that you do use smartwatches. Tell us what the participants are asked to do and what the smartwatches are doing day to day for the participants.
Yeah. So, like I said, they wore a smartwatch for a week, and they were instructed to wear it all day. They could take it off at night to charge. But four times a day, at a semi-random time, they would get cued to answer some questions, including a rating of their mental alertness. We asked other things about their mood and fatigue level as well, but the study really focused on the rating of their alertness. And then we also had them do a very brief cognitive test that measures basically working memory, processing speed, those kind of things. And then we looked at how their alertness and their performance on that test were associated over those four different time points throughout the day and across those 7 days.
You mentioned mood. Mood traditionally, is that considered an important aspect of this type of investigation? Has that been a sticking point in past research?
Yeah. So to give a little bit of context, traditionally when people, when older adults come in and they are expressing concern about cognitive changes and the doctor has them do, a screening measure, kind of like what you talked about with the three words, and doesn't see anything on the testing. That a lot of times then their complaints are attributed to, oh, they're depressed or they're just worried well. And there is an overlap between depressive symptoms and concern about cognition. And those two things are correlated. So in our study of using the Apple Watch, we actually asked about their mood as well, and then controlled for their mood in looking at that association between mental alertness and how they did on the cognitive test. So that we could control for whether there was any depression going on. So the association between the alertness and the cognitive performance was independent of their mood, which is an important thing to do when you're looking at subjective cognitive concern, because, again, it can be associated with depression for sure.
Perceived sharpness and actual performance, it seems, tends to dip later in the day. There's that horrible word, sundowning, that is used sometimes. Is that a finding that maybe should change how doctors schedule cognitive testing? I know when my doctor gives me those three words, it's usually first thing in the morning when I go in for a physical.
Yeah, so good question. So we did find in this study, and other studies have found, that there is a time of day effect on cognitive function. And that's pretty normal. Sundowning is used in the context more of when people have pretty severe dementia, moderate to severe dementia, and tend to get more confused at the end of the day. But at the other kind of more normal end of the spectrum, everyone tends to perform worse on cognitive tests when they're tired. And so that's more likely to happen at the end of the day. So as you were saying, it's really to get a person's best level of performance on cognitive testing, we do typically try and assess people at the beginning of the day if we can.
Now, your study ran for a week, is that correct?
Yes, people wore the Apple Watch for a week and responded four times a day for a week.
So I'm wondering if that is enough that you would go so far as to say, patient A, person A, you are at moderate risk of some type of dementia. Or if not, what would it take before this kind of tool could actually be accurate in that area?
Yeah, that's a great question, and definitely more work needs to be done. This was really one of the very first studies to look at how ratings of mental alertness relate to cognition, and there's a lot more that we need to know. One of the reasons that assessing somebody's subjective cognitive function is important is that we know from previous fairly recent research that having a subjective cognitive concern does put people at risk for going on to develop dementia and Alzheimer's disease, and can also increase their risk of having biomarkers, amyloid and tau in the brain that are associated with Alzheimer's disease. So this is kind of the first step with this type of data, collecting this information in real time. And so what things that we need to do next are to be able to follow people longitudinally and understand how the data that we're collecting in this context is related to cognitive change over time, and how it relates to risk of these folks then going on to develop cognitive impairment or dementia, and understanding the biologic biomarkers associated with complaints. So those are kind of two next steps that we'll be doing before we would, you know, this would become something that is used in the clinic. So there's definitely more work to be done here.
It really seems like you're onto something with this smartwatch technique. Instead of running for a week, do you see a time where maybe a smartwatch is a, I'll call it, permanent tool that could be used to help predict a dementia risk?
I think so. I think there's lots of opportunities for collecting information, both in terms of people's own perceptions, how they're doing on objective measures, even unobtrusive information might give us clues about their cognition and whether somebody is showing evidence of decline over time. I think it could also be used similar to like a Holter monitor that measures heart health over a short period of time, or even some of the sleep assessments that people are doing now in their home, where they send them home with these devices for a period of time and assess them in their own environment. That I think that would be another potential use down the road.
Oh, here's an interesting question from a KCBS listener. I hadn't thought of that. Asking, what are the drawbacks to asking people to wear a device that interrupts them several times a day? I mean, do you get the factor, like, leave me alone?
Yes, very good question. So there's a sweet spot between getting enough data that we can make sense of these fluctuations over the course of a day and across the 7-day period, and annoying people to the point where they don't want to participate in the study, or they don't, you know, put good effort into it, and we don't get good data. So, you know, that's kind of another part of what we're assessing when we're doing these kind of studies. We call it feasibility, where, you know, what are people willing to do in terms of our research and collecting this data? And I will say that we had a very good response rate in the study that we did. There are studies that go longer, a couple weeks, and I think that's certainly where you start to run into fatigue about, you know, collecting this type of data. The easier that you can make it, the more obtrusive, of course, that's going to be easier for people to comply with.
Dr. Farias, we really have less than a minute left, but to kind of put a bow on this, for families watching a loved one age, what's the takeaway from your research right now? People listening, what should they take away from it?
Yeah, I mean, I think one is if you see things that are concerning, bring it up with your primary care doctor. I mean, that is always the first step, and they are, you know, very knowledgeable about options for assessment. They can do it in clinic assessment. They can refer to a specialist. So that's always the first step, is to talk with a primary care.
Cadillac, porcupine, walnut. There, I did it.
There you go.
Dr. Sarah Farias, professor of neurology at UC Davis, senior author of this fascinating study. Thanks so much for coming on today. We appreciate it.
I appreciate your interest in the study.
Subscribe to the All Local wherever you get your podcasts, and stream us on your smart speaker 24/7 by saying, play KCBS Radio.